Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Monday, March 28th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host Chris Drew, here to talk about all things, mainly college football. Pretty much we cross boundaries into other sports, and we're going to cross boundaries into public MMA today. So we will talk about some current events as long as they're athletic looking or combat sports. We will talk about them. But we are here today to talk to you about everything going on, starting with the wha-pow heard around the world, right? And Will Smith walked on stage and smacked the shit out of Chris Rock. And it was the most awkward but funniest thing I've ever seen.
It was awesome. It was awesome, Zach. Like first of all, Chris Rock was out of line. Like with the making comments about, you know, Will Smith's wife, and she has alopecia.
Time out. No, the fuck he wasn't. No, he was not fucking out of line.
I don't love it. You know,
it's a stand-up comedy, a comedian. I mean, this is the same people. You watch Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle says the most offensive shit you've ever heard of. And you go to any Oscar show, any show like that, everyone in the crowd is fair game to get roasted. This man talking about he disrespected my family. He was fucking joking about your wife having short hair. Shut your soft ass bitch ass up, Will.
I like it from Will. I'm team Will here. And I love Chris Rock.
Listen. I'm on both sides of this argument here. There's no reason that Will Smith should have done that. It wasn't that serious. But I'm all about smacking the shit out of somebody that says something that you feel is disrespectful. I believe in that. Like as long as it's man on man. Right. I know. I don't even see where that viral video is going to go.
Damn. Clip it. Make gangsters great again is where I'm at. I love
that. I'm just saying, like, we've lost touch with the society that 30 years ago, if you disrespected a man, he was going to punch you in the face. Mm-hmm. And like, there was you would eliminate 90% of the foolishness, as Josh Pate tweeted, in the world if an open hand slap was on the table, right? Like, I got no problem with smacking the shit out of somebody who disrespects you.
You think it was real?
Will should have never been disrespected. It was a fucking joke, and it wasn't even that bad. Now, if he made a joke about the fact that, like, the joke now is, well, apparently you can't make fun of Jada's hair, but you can fuck her, right? That's the Will Smith. And we're trying to figure out, like, when will Will Smith smack a bitch, right? Mm-hmm. He will if you make fun of Jada's hair, but if you stick your dick in her, won't. Doesn't care about that much. That's not as disrespectful as talking about how short her hair is. That's why Will Smith's a bitch.
Do you think it was real?
I go back and forth. I mean, it looked really real, and everything that happened afterwards, it looked real. But at the same time, there's no chance in hell I'm watching Oscars. Zero chance. Mm-hmm. I see on Twitter that Will Smith smacked Chris Rock. I tuned in right away, and I'm like, please let this dude win Best Actor. And sure enough, he did.
Mm-hmm. And
the speech was a joke, but whatever.
it's crazy because, like, I've watched the video a couple times over, and it looks like Chris Rock almost leaned in for the smack, and then the words afterwards didn't, that felt real. Like, he was real mad. And then I saw, like, kind of after they went to commercial break, he got pulled aside by, like, Tyler Perry, and they were like, yo, like, are you good? And he was crying. Like, this whole kind of long thing. Did Chris Rock handle it right? Like, what would you have done if you were Chris Rock in that moment?
No, I mean, there's no chance that a man is going to come up, especially if, I mean, never mind, by myself, one-on-one, it would never happen. But, like, in front of people, like, there's no chance that a man is going to come up and hit me in my face with anything, hand, fist, elbow, doesn't matter, and you're not going to have to catch my hands. Like, it's just never going to happen. I don't care if we're in the Oscars. I don't care if we're at a funeral. Like, if you hit me in my face, like, I have a certain level of self-respect where you're not just going to not do that to me. You are not going to do that to me. It's just that simple. I don't care if, and it's one of those things, it is about self-respect. Like, I don't care if you are, you know, Conor McGregor. I don't care if you're Floyd Mayweather. If you're just going to whoop my ass, like, I'm not going out like that. Like, you are not just going to disrespect me like that. I have two sons that need to see that there's strength in my name and their name that is being handed to them, there's 0% chance you're going to smack me anywhere in the world and I'm not going to come back. Like, no chance. Unless you knock me out. Like, make it good. Make it really good. If you just knock me out, yeah, I might be down for the count, but that's about it. There's no way. But I did want to note, because it is the most softballed. It's not even a soft toss joke, right? It's teed up on the tee for you. And that is that Will Smith will play Juwan Howard in a movie at some point. But the question was who had the better smack? And we know the answer, right? Will actually connected. Like, it was a real one. Juwan Howard like barely touched the guy because he, I don't know, never done that before.
Will connected and hit the right target, because Juwan hit someone that was – he hit somebody else. The Will Smith thing was interesting because, like, after he smacked him, you kind of saw, like, a little smirk from Will. He's like, yeah, I got his ass good. But, you know, Tupac would have shot him. So, anyway, I digress. Okay. March Madness, it's been really real. Final Four matchup, Duke and North Carolina. Zach, is Duke going to win the whole thing? Coach K going to have his way out right off into the sunset?
I mean, they certainly look like it. I would say either them or Kansas are my two picks. But I don't know. I mean, this is the Blue Bloods, right? It's the teams that you would expect to be there. I mean, granted, they weren't all the one seeds, but if you just sat down before the season, knew nothing about rosters, you're like, who do you think is going to make the Final Four? It'd be these four teams. Mm-hmm. It would be a lot like the college football playoffs being Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia, which pretty much every year it's you know, three of those four with another blue blood like Oklahoma. Or, like, it is the nature of these sports. And I know every now and then you get a Cinderella, right? You get a Michigan State that makes the playoffs. That will happen maybe once every 10 years. But the reality is this, these blue blood teams are the best top to bottom rosters, facilities, development, coaches, everything. Of course, they get the best players with the best coaches, the best everything, nutrition, strength training, everything. The fact that anyone would think that, like, oh, anybody can win it. Like, yeah, no, they can't. Like, no, they can't. This is a blue blood sport. There's too much money in it, right? These big time schools are not, like, they're so far ahead of everyone else that it's hard to catch them. It's just more about, all right, which one's going to win it all? And basketball is a little different. There's way more schools. Like, which blue blood is it going to be, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, occasionally you get a whoever.
St. Peter. What do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah, but that, I mean, and that is a Cinderella story, but I'm talking about to make it to the Final Four, right? Because basketball truly is celebrated as, like, the Final Four is the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Once you get there, you set another goal to win it all. But that's why they cut down nets and shit for the Final Four. Like, that is the national championship. And then until you're there, then it's not. Then you've got to go try to win it all. But a Final Four year is celebrated like it's a national championship.
Yeah, St. Peter's had, you know, obviously they'll be remembered for a long, long time. A 15 seed to make the Elite Eight. That's really incredible. But, at some point, I mean, you saw against North Carolina, the talent gap there is very wide, and you can only stay hot for so long. Yeah. Like, once you're done riding that high and you face a team that's going to slow you down a little bit, can you react, and are you talented enough? And it just became really clear that they, unfortunately, weren't talented enough. But
it's not only that they're not talented enough, it's the depth, right?
Yes.
You watch that Miami basketball game, what happened? Their point guard had to get sat with three fouls. The next guy that came in, he wasn't as good defensively, right? Their center fouls out, you know, late in the second half. And all of a sudden, they don't have a big guy on the floor anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So you just watch how that stuff transpires, and it's like Miami just doesn't have the depth that a team like Kansas has. Right. So they lose their center, who's a really good player. He can hang with Kansas. He can hang with North Carolina. He can hang with those teams. Once he's out, the next guy's like, oh, God, he's going to get eaten alive. It's just depth. It's talent depth.
And for those teams that aren't blue buds, it requires everything to go perfect game after game for them to be able to win. And when something doesn't go perfect, like two early fouls or, like, you know, someone else on the other team, you know, getting hot early, that basically it's over at that point. And that's why, I mean, St. Peter, really good team, you know, really fun to watch. It's really cool to kind of see them through the tournament. But once UNC opened up, like, what, like 8-2, you kind of knew, okay, like, things can't stay perfect forever because it's sports. And
absolutely.
So Duke, UNC in the Final Four, that's going to be insane. First time ever, I believe, right?
Yeah, first time they've ever played in the tournament, let alone, I mean, this late in the tournament. But yeah, it's just crazy to think about then that rivalry. Like that would be like Ohio State Michigan meeting in the Final Four of football. Think about that playoff game. I mean, it would be the most ridiculous playoff game ever, or like the 06 national championship game when everyone in the Midwest thought it should be a rematch of Ohio State and Michigan. Come to find out it shouldn't have, because
Did you really? Okay, this is Zach Tooting's on her. Okay. No,
just, anyways, what do you say? I digress.
Okay, calm down.
So yeah, it's crazy though. Crazy to have that matchup. Coach K's last year. It will write this story forever, right? They will never, that rivalry will talk about this game for the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. Like Mike Krzyzewski, his final year, legendary coach, went to the Final Four in six straight decades or something like that.
Six straight decades. That's unbelievable.
I actually thought it was seven, but that doesn't make sense really. I guess it could be. But, just nuts. The legend that he is, he will be, you know, obviously first ballot Hall of Famer, the greatest, second greatest basketball coach of all time behind John Wooden. And there's no debating that. But anyway, still, what an accomplished career. And for his last game, his last year to either be through North Carolina to get to the national championship game or upset by North Carolina in the Final Four, they will talk about that for 100 years. Mm-hmm. About this year in that rivalry. It's going to be fun to watch. I mean, they're going to make a spectacle out of it. You know that. This is going to be, I mean, they are going to try to monetize the hell out of it. That's all they're going to talk about. And we'll see we'll see what happens. Let's see how those calls go. Just imagine if my ref bracket thing that I told you about would actually be a thing right now.
Incredible. Incredible. I do want to say legendary exit. So if obviously Coach K final year, winning a title, some other guys that kind of went out as champions: Peyton Manning, David Robinson, Michael Strahan, Jerome Bettis, Ray Lewis, and John Elway all went out as champions. They all went out, you know, peak of whatever. If Coach K wins a championship this year, where would he rank amongst that list?
Would it be a amongst better
exit
that list?
Would it be a better exit than Peyton Manning? You think? Would it be a better exit than Ray Lewis?
Yeah, I think it would be a better exit than pretty much any of them. I mean, for different reasons. One, I also don't like comparing coaches and players because they're very
That's
very different jobs. But but I think with what Coach K has done at Duke for 50 years or whatever it's been now, for him to leave on this high note is kind of the cherry on top of a ridiculous career. Like Peyton Manning's with the Broncos, not really the same, right? If it was the Colts the whole time, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't like comparing coaches and players just because it's very different careers, right?
I mean, great exits. Like, where
no doubt. Mm-hmm. No doubt. But this could be one of the best ever. I mean, what are we talking about? They're 2 seed. It's not even like they were the number one overall team loaded with, you know, five NBA starters. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're obviously very talented and solid-ass team, but they didn't have that, you know, that path to glory that people would imagine Duke would have in year 50, whatever, with Mike Krzyzewski. It's going to be fun. Either, no matter what, it's going to be fun. But I think if he can win it all, the next question is this, like as a competitor, because he's still pretty young, still pretty energetic. He's not like some old coach like Bobby Bowden where it's like, oh, it's time for him to go, right?
Oh,
he's
like still he should have went. Yeah, like he should have went 3 years ago type thing.
Yeah, it's not that at all. And if he wins it all, like, does he walk away saying, yep, that's how I want to go out? Or is he like, damn, I think I can do it again? Because that's the issue with a competitor like Tom Brady just did, right? Some of these guys that you know, whether they hold on too long or not, like, it's just like, damn, just did it. Like, if they were to win it all, even not win it all, they went to the Final Four. Is he going to walk off the basketball court and say, I'm never going to do this again, and I'm okay with that? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to say, I think I got at least one or two more in me? Because that's the problem with some of these guys. They're addicted to it. It's like being a meth head. It really is. So it's like, we'll see what happens. But
like, these aren't rational humans. Like, these are the most competitive, the most insane, the most driven people, you know, out there. And so, that's something that I struggle with, that I think they would struggle with as well. I think that this is setting up to be the greatest exit ever, if it indeed becomes an exit, for a couple reasons. First of all, they lost. They lost his last game, you know, last regular season game. Secondly, they are not loaded, like you said. And third, I think that winning in March Madness, winning the whole thing, is one of the most difficult things to do in sports because there's so much. I mean, you have to win. A, you have to win so many games, and B, it's one game elimination. Like you don't get the leeway. And three, basketball is such an odd sport to have this style of tournament, which is why you have, you know, all the upsets, all the weird stuff. I think it's the hardest of the tournaments to win because unlike the other tournaments, March Madness is not always about who's the best team. Like the NBA playoffs is always structured to kind of the best team's going to win the whole thing. NFL, it's similar, but it's hard to win the Super Bowl if you're not the best team. In college basketball, it's different because the tournament format style isn't always to crown who the best team is. It's just who's the hottest team and who can weather the storms rather than
anything. And if you look no further than the Houston game, right? The Houston game, Houston's playing Villanova. They made more field goals, better field goal percentage, more blocks, more assists, more rebounds. They held Nova's top scorer, Colin Gillespie. He only had 6 points, right?
They were the better team.
Mm-hmm. And Nova won the game. Why? Because Houston went 1-for-20 from 3-point land. Like that's just absurd. It's just they just were ice freezing, fucking ice cold
on good looks. On good looks.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I just think March Madness is so difficult to win. But I do want to move forward, Zach. Me and you talked about the Mount Rushmore stuff months and months and months ago, and we kind of agreed on that show that we didn't love touching it for a couple reasons. A Mount Rushmore came out. I don't have it in front of me. It's that time of the offseason where people like love
some fan type in Mount Rushmore is what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that time of year. People love to float it out there. And I've seen a couple, and it's kind of circulated to Ohio State Twitter. And I have a couple issues with Mount Rushmores, and I think you do too. Here's my issue with Mount Rushmores in sports. What is the criteria, Zach? Like if someone says, here's a Mount Rushmore for receivers, what's the criteria? Is it stat-based? Is it talent-based?
It's an impossible task because if you're going to go off of talent, if you're going to go off of stats, that's just wildly unfair because the game has changed and there's so many, you know, there's so many variables that go into it, right? Like if you look at the receiver position specifically, it's like, all right, well, if you played receiver in the 90s, like there wasn't a good quarterback, a great quarterback in that list, right? If you played early in the Urban Meyer tenure, like with Braxton, he could definitely throw it. Then JT, not a great thrower. So like who is, you know, how was your O-line?
Right? Drop your Mount Rushmore wide receivers in the chat so we can kind of have an idea of what you guys are all thinking. Your top four Ohio State receivers, drop them in the chat. We'll read some of them out there if there's some good ones. But no, keep going. You're right. Receiver is such a reliant position.
Well, that's never going to change. I mean, they still have the conversation. Who's the best receiver of all time? And I think then at that point, you have to go through their entire career. And that's just my opinion, right? And there's reasons for everything, right? Like Devin Smith, great player, like one of the best I've ever seen. Had a multiple knee injuries in the NFL, and so he struggled. But it's not because he wasn't that great. It's because he got hurt, right? Michael Thomas, completely underutilized at Ohio State, has shown that through his first 4 years in the NFL, and then he's dealt with some injuries. But it's just, in my opinion, it's a big picture. You have to look at everything and truly evaluate how – you know, where that person falls. Because to say that Garrett Wilson is better than Michael Thomas, like the answer is like, well, we hope so. But right now, you can't logically make that argument. Now, was he a little faster than Mike? Yeah, a little bit, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. Like ball skills, route running, separation, like they're very comparable. And for right now, Mike has shown that at the next level, he's dominant in those same areas. If Garrett does the same, then it's a conversation, right? And it's not about NFL success, but it's about a full body of work because Garrett Wilson caught passes from Justin Fields and CJ Stroud. Both will be NFL starters. Mm-hmm. Mike caught passes from Braxton Miller, albeit because of injury, he was not, and JT Barrett never started a game in the NFL at quarterback. Right. So is it apples to apples? Like, is it a proper comparison?
No, it can't be. Is Michael Thomas, I don't remember your Mount Rushmore you did weeks and weeks and weeks ago. Was Michael Thomas on it? Or is if I ask you today, is Michael Thomas on your Mount Rushmore?
I mean, I'm more of a
historian, I think, than most.
Yeah, more of a historian than most. Like, I don't care what you say. I don't care if you, again, this is going back to accolades or not. Like, how can you have a list of the best receivers to ever play at Ohio State Mm-hmm. And the only guy who won the best receiver award, the Blitnikoff award, is not on it. Now I see both sides of the argument, right? The answer is because the award's complete dog shit now. And I don't know if it was back then. I was too young. I didn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. But it's dog shit now. The best receiver, Jordan Addison, won it. Like, get the fuck out of here. Okay. Jesus. Best receiver in the country. Gotcha, guys. Like, what a joke. So it's tough, but how do you not have Terry Glenn on the list? But if you look at the full body of work, like I'm talking about, Terry Glenn is not on the list.
Yeah.
He was a great player that year. You know, didn't really have NFL success. And then how do you not have Joey Galloway on the list? He has to be on the list, right? So you have to have Chris Carter.
But does Joey Galloway have to be on the list?
Yeah.
Like, so that would mean you leave Chris Olave off the list.
Absolutely. What are you talking about?
But it's like
Joey Galloway had a similar college career to Chris Olave. And, you know, based on the times,
yeah,
a similar impact as Chris Olave. And the fucker played for 17 years in the NFL. I mean, yes, Joey Galloway is in over Chris Olave.
But it's like the Mount Rushmore of Ohio State receivers. How do you leave the guy that had the best, you know, had the best career as an Ohio State receiver?
You're not taking into account how the game has changed.
Yeah,
they throw it every fucking snap, Chris. Yeah, that's not impressive. It is impressive, but he's not better than Chris Carter. Chris Carter's the best player to ever play the position.
Right. I'm just saying.
Compare their stats.
It's tough to leave off the guy who holds the record for, you know, most.
No, it's not, because it's going to be broken in 2 years.
2 years? Okay.
Maybe this year. I mean, Jaxon Smith-Njigba will probably have 130 catches, and then he's the best of all time. The game, you can't take into account, if we're talking about the best to play the position, then stats have nothing to fucking, they do have something to do with it. But you can't just say, oh, he's better, he had more.
Boat versus goat, there it is. Because I think that, like, in the record books, like, Olave will be remembered kind of as better than Garrett Wilson. Versus goat.
That doesn't make you...
Garrett Wilson's a better player.
Than who?
I think Garrett Wilson's a better player than Olave, but I think there's more of a, you know, argument for Olave to be on the Mount Rushmore than there is for Garrett because of the touchdown record.
Sure. I mean, like I said, it's a full big picture, but at the end of the day, I go by this. Who is the best? The best four should go up there.
Who are the best four receivers in Ohio State history?
Well, I don't know.
Come on.
I mean, you have to go Chris Carter. You have to go. I would go Chris Carter, Joey Galloway.
If you talk about best, Michael Thomas has to be on there.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Thomas has to be on there, so that's three of the four, mm-hmm. And then I'll probably go.
You're about to leave Terry Glenn off.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you go Dev? Do you go Dev there? Do you go
No.
Terry? do you go?
I mean, there's a number of options, right? Say Antonio Holmes is a good option. Ted Ginn. It's hard not to pick Ted Ginn.
Sonsenbacher.
No, come on, man. Dane Sonsenbacher. Get the hell out of here. Michael Jenkins is another one. I mean, what he did with Craig Krenzel as his quarterback and a run heavy offense. I'm the fourth one's tough, but I will leave it blank. I will leave the rock uncarved and give me about 5 years to see how Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson play out, because those guys that we just mentioned, we got to watch their full body of work. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about etched in stone, I mean, carved in the side of a mountain that doesn't exist on the Olentangy River, like, I'm putting three faces carved and leaving stone for the fourth.
Gamble for the, you know who I'm leaving for the fourth? There's a guy on the roster currently.
Marvin Harrison.
I do want to ask the next question though. Like, of the guys on this current roster, you know, the Mount Rushmore thing's a big deal, and I know you hate it, but I'm gonna drag you through it. Who is most likely on the current roster to be on their own respective position groups Mount Rushmore in the next 5 years?
Who on the roster is most likely to make it, like, on their position group?
Yep.
I think Paris Johnson and DeJuan Jones have a real shot at tackle.
To be the Mount Rushmore of tackles at Ohio State.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, you know, they're still young. Like I said, big picture, they're on, like, the very, very front half of their picture. Like, yeah. But I think they have a chance to be on it. You know, you can't really project some of those young DNs. I could definitely see them being on it. No one really in the secondary, just because there's been some great players, and I don't know that there's anyone of that caliber. The linebacker position, complete unknown, probably not. The receiver position is a wild card, right? Jaxon Smith-Njigba definitely is on the right path, right? So then the younger kids, who knows, right? Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka. You know, they could be, but we don't know that yet. Travion Henderson is the one that I think has a real shot. As the CJ Stroud should be the first face carved if he does what he's supposed to do this offseason and this fall. But the running back position's tough because Ohio State's been so loaded. I mean, who, so, and not trying to go down that path. I mean, he would probably be fourth for me, right? Mm-hmm. You have to go Archie, then you have to go Eddie, then you have to go Zeke. That's the top three. People make arguments for JK. I like JK. I think Travion will be a much better player in the end than JK. So, and then there's 100 other ones, right? You also can't leave off some of the great Heisman winners of the past, right? Mm-hmm. We just skip past them. So it's tough. It's generational is what it is. It really is. I mean, Vic Janowitz and some of the people that won Heismans at Ohio State, to sit and disrespect them by just because they're really, really old, like, mm-hmm. not entirely fair. So I always like to do, like, people that are alive might be more fair, right? Or people that played in my lifetime is a good one, because it's tough to do of all time, because there's, you know, especially the running back position back in the 30s and 40s. I mean, that's all they did was run the ball, and they won a lot of games and won a lot of Heismans. So it's hard to discount those running backs, but the game is just very different. I mean, shit, some of them didn't even have face masks and pads. Like, it's like, there's a different game is what it is. And it's not to disrespect them. They were the forefathers, right? They were the founders of the sport that led to what we get to watch now, but it's a very different sport.
For me, on the current roster, guys that are going to break through to Mount Rushmore, I think it's super obvious answer. The two obvious answers, the ones that you mentioned, C.J. Stroud, I think, just because quarterback play now is really is going to be such a highlight for kind of this Ohio State team moving forward. But I think the running back one is also another easy one for me. I think Travion Henderson is going to have a really big time year this year, and then next year also. And I think his body of work over 3 years, especially if they do what I think they're going to do, and that's win a ring, I think that does elevate him over Dobbins for that fourth slot. And obviously, like, I'm not a running back historian, but I follow Ohio State pretty closely and know enough to think that you're four right. Archie, Eddie, Zeke, and then I think that fourth one, by the time it's said and done, will be Travion then there at four. And I think that's not even that hot of a take. On the receiver side, I do expect one of these two receivers to break every record, single season record for Ohio State, mostly because the passing attack is going to be that good. It just depends on who. It's funny. I think it's going to depend on who Ryan Day wants to break all the records. I think they're both going to be open enough that whoever they kind of scheme this for is going to shatter the record in terms of Marv versus JSN. But those are only two guys that I have that I think will end up on their respective position, Mount Rushmore. But it's the receiver position is tough because Ohio State has had so many tough receivers, and they've had so many great receivers in eras where we didn't have great quarterbacks. And that's something that's
what makes it tough, right? And you want to talk about the position that's absolutely impossible to make a Mount Rushmore is the corner position at Ohio State. I mean, it's just that's been forever, right? I mean, all forever. They've had Ahmad Plummer, Sean Springs, like way back. And then all the way through the run that Urban had with corners from, you know, Marshawn, Garyon, Bradley Roby, all those names. Denzel, you know, you could literally try to list them, and then at the end be like, damn, I didn't say Okuda. What am I talking about? Like, how'd I forget him? There's just so many that it's almost impossible to do. That's why I didn't touch it. But it's fun off-season conversation.
Yeah, I see that list. Winfield, Springs, Gamble, and Lattimore is the number four. Would you put Lattimore on there ahead of Okuda? Was Lattimore better than Okuda?
Yeah, Marshawn's the best corner we had.
Okay. That was easy. I thought I was going to catch you being like, but no, you.
No. I agree with that list. I don't remember Sean Springs. I know he was a great player. I don't remember him that much to know that he was that high. I agree with Antoine Winfield. Chris Gamble's the best, I mean, two-way player I've seen other than Charles Woodson. I mean, Charles Woodson didn't really play two ways, right? They gave him a reverse every now and then. Chris Gamble legitimately started at receiver, switched to corner, was a dominant corner, returned. I mean, he was, in my opinion, he should have won a Heisman Trophy. That's how good he was. Yeah. Just freak show. And then Marshawn at four, I agree with the list.
And when you make the Alabama Mount Rushmore of receivers, you start with one name and one name only. Happy belated birthday to Jameson Williams, our favorite.
I mean, that is definitely sarcasm.
But yeah, well, I put that tweet up and Alabama fans are mad cooking at me. Yeah, cooking me. It's like, all right.
I mean, Jameson is great. James is a great player. But I mean, you talk about Julio. Is one of one.
Like, yeah. Okay. Julio. And then who else?
Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith won a Heisman. Like, what do you mean? Who else? Wait.
Better season than Calvin. Better season than Jerry.
Devontae Smith.
Not a better season than Devontae Smith, but also a better season than Amari Cooper. In his first 10 games, he set the Alabama pace in yards, touchdowns, and yards per catch, more than any of those guys, shattering the record that Amari Cooper had as a Heisman finalist. But I digress. You know, I'm not here to talk about Alabama because
I agree. You know, nobody's a bigger JMO fan than me.
Yeah. All right. The Deshaun Watson press conference. Oh, wait. Happy our boy, the Rod Farva, turns 40 tomorrow.
Happy birthday, Rod. Rod Farva.
The Rod Farva.
If that is your real name.
All right.
Can I get a large Farva?
Deshaun Watson at his press conference, and I watched the entire thing. It was very I don't know if you watched it, Zach, but it was really uncomfortable. Everyone was nervous. Everybody was sweating. Everybody was shaking. There was a grand total of like 3 football questions, I believe. The rest of them were about the massage therapist. And the one that caught me was the one reporter that got up there and asked. It was like, Deshaun, dog, like, why did you have 40 massage therapists? Why wouldn't you just find one and stick with them? And he made this whole big long thing about, you know, athletes are busy. They need a lot of massage therapists. But Zach, in your time around elite athletes, how many massage therapists did most of them have? And why would Deshaun need 40?
Let's just be very clear on what this was, right? I don't know that this was sexual assault. I don't know that it wasn't. So I can't even talk on that. Neither can you. Neither can anyone.
But yeah, I can't. Absolutely not.
The problem is people will. And that's the issue that I have with society and the media. So I will talk about what goes on with athletes and Instagram and Instagram models and influencers and girls that have their friend take a video of them shaking their ass and like what goes on in the world. We can talk about that. What exactly happened with Deshaun Watson? I could give you an educated guess. But what I don't know and never will know is, did he sexually assault anyone or did he not? But here's what goes on. And you see it all the time. Players, you find out, all right, we're going to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Immediately, players are on Instagram looking up chicks in Pasadena, like adding them, liking pictures, trying to get in the DMs because they're trying to get laid. I don't know why this is confusing and why people are like, why did he have all these massage masseuses? What? He wanted to bang 40 different girls. That's why. What do you mean? I don't care what he says. It was not like, oh, I was always a professional. No, it wasn't. He slept with half of them. I guarantee it. And those half were consensual, I would imagine, if I had to guess, right? Because that's what people do. They slide in DMs. And so he slid in DMs. He probably searched masseuse on Instagram and was like, ooh, she cute. Like, let me slide in her DMs. And it's one of those things that, if it didn't work, he wouldn't keep doing it. But guess what? It worked. He was getting laid and getting his legs rubbed, and he just kept doing it, kept finding new masseuses. Now, like I said, I don't know if every single one of those was consensual. I don't even have a guess because there's no way to know, right? But what we do know is we don't know, and a grand jury looked really hard at trying to find out if it was and couldn't find anything. And so they decided, you know what, we can't accuse him of that and penalize him for that because we don't see any reason to believe that that did happen. So you as a human and as society, we should not judge him because they tried. And it's like judging. It's like back in the day when they would penalize someone for, you know, stealing with no proof and they'd cut off their hand and it's like, damn. But what if he didn't?
Yeah.
Now he doesn't have a hand. Like that's why it is innocent until proven guilty, right?
This is not funny, bro. That's fucked up.
I'm just saying this shit was real.
I'm more yelling at myself for like, damn, buddy, looking down like I didn't take nothing, but now they took my hand.
Right. I mean, that's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's no different than falsely accused or falsely convicted people where it's like, damn, that's the death penalty conversation, right? Like, You could give someone the death penalty and kill them, take their life, and later find out with DNA evidence that wasn't out previously. Oh shit, it wasn't them. It's like what?
That shit's messed up.
That's the biggest
we could enter a whole different debate world.
But yeah, and I'm not trying to get into that debate. But the moral of the story is you cannot judge or think that Deshaun Watson did this because you don't know, and it's unfair to judge him. And put that on him when there's a very legit possibility. I mean, I coached at Ohio State. I had girls in DMs all the time. I mean, I obviously, especially when I was single, it was like just absurd, like shooting fish in a barrel, like just nuts. And those same ones that the minute I got fired, it was like, unfriend him, block him. And I'm like, what? Like,
damn.
If you could have seen what you were doing 2 weeks ago in a hotel in Houston, like,
really. Cut it out, bro. Cut it out.
I'm just
bro.
Saying. And so, my favorite is this one, the woke warrior on the West Coast, Big Buckeye. She is just all over this. Like, I just can't, as a woman, understand this. And she immediately, when I got fired, she unfriended me, like acted like she never met me. I'm like, what, lady? Like, we have been in the same bed together multiple times. Like, now you're going to act like you don't know me. Gotcha. But it's a hypocrisy, right? And my moral of that story was, I've seen how this stuff works. My players have told stories. Like, there's so many thirsty women. And I'm sure I know for a fact on the other side, you look at some of these, mm-hmm. like Jenny Finch, some of these absolute stone cold celebrity athletes, like what their DMs must look like. Oh my God, far worse. There's far more thirsty far men. Worse. But moral of the story is, they're in there heavy, and it is like, it's easy for him to pull it, right? And then who knows the reality of which one or how many there were that maybe felt uncomfortable. And if he did make it uncomfortable or did assault them, I think that's horrific. But on the other side, if I'm some random masseuse who wears, you know, 1/10 of clothes on every one of my pictures, and Deshaun Watson hits me up randomly about a massage, you have to have some idea that he's probably trying to get with you, right? I mean, I'm not justifying it, making and saying it makes it right, but to walk in there and Deshaun Watson hits on you after that's how he found you, even if it's wrong, if your response is, oh my God, it's like, lady, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, we got to be at least. Yeah.
If you didn't, Deshaun Watson slid in your DMs on Instagram on a picture of you with your titties hanging out, and you didn't think he might be interested in you sexually?
He didn't call the masseuse office.
Right. He didn't go to Yelp and find a 5-star fucking spa and massage parlor. He went to IG. His mode of finding you should tell you everything about his intentions. Like I said, not saying that makes it right, mm-mm. but don't be surprised when he hits on you. Like, he went to Instagram to find a masseuse. Like, who does that?
Deshaun Watson does it. Zach, that's all I got for today, bro. Get me out of here.
No, I'm just saying, this needs to be discussed for another 30 seconds. Like, if you want to have heart surgery, do you go to Instagram to find the sexiest heart surgeon? Do you?
No.
What do? You go, you start doing research. Yeah. Like, get Mayo reviews. You start trying to find out, are they really, really good at what they do? If you go to Instagram to get some girl to rub your legs, do you care about your deep tissue muscle recovery? Fuck no. You care about what she looks like, and maybe would she do a little extra? You went to Instagram to find her. Like, we've lost all common sense in the world. Honestly.
All of it.
Oh.
Menace out, bro. Menace out. I'm uncomfortable.
All right. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Menace out.